This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate here on the program. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we extend a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM 206, and all of you tuning in with our live streaming available at horseracingradio.net. Welcome to the program. Another exciting edition of Trainer Talk on tap for you here this evening. JT, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. Happy to be here and happy to have our guest aboard today. Yeah. In studio.
In
really
studio.
Cool.
Yeah, we don't get a chance to do this very often because we're on the road so much, but it's nice that our guest was able to come by the studio today.
Yeah, and he found it.
Which is never easy.
No.
Well, look, this is a very busy time. Certainly for most people that work in the industry leading up to the Kentucky Derby, we're 24 days away from the run for the roses. For us, especially with all of our Derby Week coverage and with broadcasting the race nationally here on the network and in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One, a little shameless plug there. Very, very busy time. But Jude, we don't have a horse on the Derby trail. We don't have an undefeated juvenile champion in our barn that we have to worry about. And we don't have... Maybe the horse is going to be the likely favorite for the Kentucky Derby, but our guest tonight does.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. A
ton of pressure.
But you'd never know it by looking at him.
No, you wouldn't. Or the man he works for, either. We're joined by the 31-year-old assistant trainer, Jack Sisterson, who grew up around racing in England. He now works with trainer Doug O'Neill, and he has been with him since 2010, and he is with you tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jack, appreciate the time. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Are you feeling any pressure yet?
It's an exciting time. No pressure yet. I'm sure it'll amount up closer to the actual day, but we're just very humbled to be in the position we're in.
Well, come on, this is old hat for you now, right? You went down this road without having another. You've been there, done that. You know what to expect.
You know, it's one that a lot of people ask, you know, what was the experience like when we had I'll Have Another? I think it was 16, 17 to one on the actual day. He was kind of an underdog going into it. This time it's slightly different because we possibly have the Kentucky Derby favorite. You know, we're not taking anything for granted, and all credit to the 19 other trainers that have, you know, the horses in the field against them.
How about the days leading up to the Derby? I mentioned being 24 days out. What's different this go round as opposed to when you were 24 days out with I'll Have Another?
You know, obviously, we have Nyquist here in Kentucky at Keeneland, where I'll Have Another was back home at Santa Anita, and his training schedule is not going to differ so much than I'll Have Another's did. Doug's been there and done that before, and I'm just taking all the instructions from Doug from this day forward, and, you know, I'll see Doug this evening, and you know, he'll come up with a schedule moving forward, but I don't see it's going to differ so much where I'll Have Another had his final work at Santa Anita. Nyquist will have it at Keeneland.
Do you actually feel any pressure, extra pressure, because you're here with the horse and he's basically your responsibility, whereas if Doug was here in a normal situation that you could be flying under the radar, so to speak?
No, I wouldn't say it's pressure, but it's the confidence that Doug gives in us as a whole team. You know that he's a phone call away at any time during the day, whether it's midnight or whether it's 5 o'clock in the morning. So if we ever have any questions to what we question what we should do at this certain time, that we pick up the phone to Doug and he'll advise us in what he wants to happen.
Are you feeling extra pressure being on the radio with us tonight?
Not really, no. I feel some pressure with...
What's more pressure?
There's more pressure with all the successful trainers and jockeys are bobbleheads in front of me right now. Look at that.
But we do have several trainers here in the studio with the bobbleheads, Doug O'Neill being one of them. You started working with Doug in 2010. We're going to talk about that. But let's go back to the beginning. You grew up in England. Your parents were around horses. They actually owned some racehorses, so you were always around it. You actually wanted to be a jockey, but you're 6 foot two, so I got news for you, Jack. That ship has sailed, my friend.
You know, growing up in England, it was always a dream of mine to move to the United States. You know, you grow up watching movies and you think, wow, wouldn't it be great to live in a country like that? And my family owned one or two horses, you know, when I was as long as I can remember. And it got into my blood from day one. We had a little pony in the back garden and I would sneak out before school and try and jump on it. My parents were, can you please get ready for school? Just give me five more minutes. And, you know, we tried to teach that pony to be a show jumper. Well, as soon as I had two sisters at the time and I would always shorten the irons and, you know, get my whip out and make them go as fast as possible and just around in circles. And that's the point where I wanted to become a jockey. You know, I'd attend races as much as possible with school schedule and things like that. And I would always sit on the arm of the couch and stick a saddle on it and watch TV from there. Unfortunately, come 13 or 14, I started to grow and that dream went pretty quick. But I knew it was, you know, the horse race industry I wanted to be in. And I love being hands-on with the horse and, you know, what better way than just to be from the trainer standpoint.
You never lose when you're in the saddle on the side of your couch, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're undefeated as a jockey.
Exactly.
No matter who goes to the lead, you're giving the whip salute down the line.
Although it's dinner time when your mother comes and drags you off.
What was your home track?
It was actually Sedgefield Racecourse, which is a jumps course. Newcastle would have been the biggest flat course there. You know, we're trying to travel up and down, you know, with the Royal Ascot, big events like that. But, you know, with school and things, it was difficult to get away at the time.
Did you have other riders maybe in England or even here in the United States that you looked up to?
It was an apprentice jockey at the time. His name was Andy Larnach. And I remember to this day, my parents owned a horse called Classic Statement. He ran... I believe it was in March. I don't know the exact date of it, but it was throughout the big Cheltenham Jumps Festival, where all the nation was focused on the Cheltenham Festival, where we had this, you know, the purse must have been about $1,500 maximum. And this apprentice jockey, we had a horse called Classic Statement, going 3 miles in heavy ground at Sedgefield. And I remember him coming down the hill in front and him actually winning. And that was my first memory of being in the winner's circle with my family. And, you know, they get the replays mailed to you afterwards. And I used to watch it 20 times a day. And within a week, I had the whole race commentary memorized. And I just, wow. On my way to school, I used to drive my sisters insane. But the more it drove them insane, the more I would kind of repeat it. And it was the whole stage of going up and being around it. I'm very fortunate to be the position I'm in because it's been a dream of mine.
Well, you know, it's funny when you're a kid, those things that you remember and you take to heart and it never seems to leave you. Have you found that as you've gotten older, you still remember that and you still recite it like when you're going for a jog or whatever?
It's one that it'll never leave my memory. You know, you look up to all these, you know, idols in the business and think, wow, wouldn't it be great to one day be able to achieve even half the things they've achieved. And just with the position I'm in now, I've been able to meet those people and work with actually a trainer like Doug O'Neill that not once did I think I'll be in a position that I'm in right now.
You know, your parents must have been excited when they found out you were going to be too big to be a jockey, because so often we have parents tell us on this program that they wouldn't want their kids to ride races, especially parents that are jockeys now. They say, there's no way I would want my kid to be a jockey because it's not an easy profession. It's a very dangerous profession. How about your parents? Were they happy that you were too big?
I think they'll never probably say that, but I think yes. You know, with the danger that, you know, involved in with being a jockey, and, you know, they always want to, you know, you should go to school and get an education and things like that. But at the end of the day, my parents are happy if I'm happy, and they would have supported me if I did not grow and was able to be a jockey. At that point, you know, I was involved heavily in soccer back home and was playing at a level to where I was thinking I may be able to go on and make a career out of that. And unfortunately in England, that didn't happen, but I'm very kind of fortunate that happened, because if it didn't happen, I wouldn't be in this position. And I think the career I'm doing right now, I'm enjoying it more than actually a career in soccer.
Yeah, well, and soccer played a major role in you coming to the United States and eventually attending the University of Louisville, right?
Yes, and I was fortunate to get a soccer scholarship and went through the equine business program there at Louisville and met a lot of great people that have educated me throughout my 4 years in Louisville and advised me in the right direction. And, you know, still keep in contact with the people in Louisville. I'm looking forward to seeing them Derby week. And it means a lot to have a lot of people supportive when you get back there, and they did a lot for me, and if I can give back to them anyway, you know, I'd be more than happy to.
Do you feel like a Kentuckian now?
You know, it's funny. Someone asked me, you sound like you're from Kentucky. I said, it's actually Alabama.
You know, it's, until you say the word Derby.
Yeah. It's, I class it as a second home of mine. I spent many great years of my life in Kentucky, and I always enjoy coming back.
How actively does the University of Louisville recruit soccer players in England?
Well, my coach at the time was Tony Colavecchia, who was from England. He left after my freshman year, and a coach called Ken Lawler came in. And I've never been around a person in my soccer career that was so successful as Ken Lawler. Off and on the field, you know, the majority of players that go through kind of this college, the athletic programs at college, it's a 4-year window and you have to go on with life and find another career. You know, very few are fortunate to actually turn professional in the sports you actually play. And Ken is a guy that teaches you throughout the 4 years of, you know, the collegiate athletics to then prepare yourself for, hey, at the end of these 4 years, you need to actually go out and find a career and make it happen, sort of thing. And a lot of credit goes to Ken Lawler that taught me a lot of things in life, not only in soccer, but in life in general.
You know, I read a story as I was getting ready for the show that was done, I believe it was in the Daily Racing Form, when you were going through the Triple Crown with I'll Have Another. And they mentioned your background playing soccer for U of L. And they said that you went on a trip to New York one day, you were playing St. John's, and all of your buddies on the team went to see different historic landmarks around New York, but you ended up going to Belmont Park. Is that true?
It is, yeah. That, you know, we would get travel per diems at school and pay for lunch and things like that and travel wherever it was.
To the window?
I took. I was trying to play for the early double, and you know, we had certain times that we have to be back for team meals and things like that. And that was my first time actually been in New York. And the first thing was, well, Belmont Park, see, I've got to experience this. And, you know, if it wasn't for Louisville, I wouldn't have been able to experience that. And, you know, several years later, coming back with a horse like I'll Have Another, it was not my first time been there. I never thought I'd be back in a position with I'll Have Another there.
Yeah, going for the Triple Crown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Visiting with Jack Sisterson, the assistant trainer to Doug O'Neill. He started with Doug in 2010. As you just heard, he attended the University of Louisville on a soccer scholarship. And Jack, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that that's the point that you were introduced to people like Todd Pletcher and Eddie Keneally, who you worked with for a while. Is that true?
Yes, I was very lucky. Actually, through Gary Stevens. I met Michael McCarthy, who was Todd's assistant at Churchill Downs. And, you know, Gary introduced me to Michael, and Michael then spoke with Todd. And the day after, I was working with them. Remember the first, it might have been a week or two before the actually Kentucky Derby, and all these horses started chipping in. paper was Rags to Riches, English Channel, Scat Daddy, Any Given Saturday. And is this kind of a normal trainer's barn with all these horses in there? And that was my first experience working for a trainer in America. And Todd was very good to me. And then I worked several other summers and went with Eddie, learned a lot from both Todd Pletcher and Eddie Keneally, and was fortunate enough to be around good horses with both trainers. Ended up in California, and here I am now.
So how did it go? How'd you hook up with Doug?
I met Doug through Doug's best friend, Mark Verge. And it was at the time where actually went, Eddie Keneally had a horse in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile called Aspire, and went to Santa Anita. It was my first experience there. I was like, wow, this place is beautiful. And Mark Verge had a horse run, and his colors were four end. And I couldn't figure out who would have a set of silks with four rent on it. And it was just on my mind that evening. I kind of looked it up, and Doug O'Neill was the trainer, and it said Westside Rentals is the owner. So I then went on the website and Googled Westside Rentals, and it came up Mark Verge. And not only did he have a rental company in the West Side, well, basically Southern California, but he owned multiple other businesses in LA. I was like, wow, this could be a cool guy to meet. And, if anything, I might learn something from him. So I actually went on his website at info@westsiderentals.com and emailed him. And within minutes, he emailed me back his cell phone number, call me, let's get coffee tomorrow morning.
Wow.
And come to find out he's best friends with Doug, and I explained, to Mark my past and, what I wanted to do. And he said, I own 20, 30 horses with Doug. Would you like to come and meet Doug Sunday morning? And that's kind of how my relationship started with Doug.
So you never had a problem taking the bull by the horns and saying, you know what, this is what I want to do. I'm going to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I was taught growing up, nothing's going to be handed to you in life, and you got to get out there and make it happen. I didn't know anyone moving to America. I didn't know anyone in California. It's, to me, if you let that kind of stop you from reaching your goals and achieving your dreams, you're never going to kind of move forward. And it's all played off the way I've wished it to happen, sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you make your own luck that way. I mean, when you're proactive, a lot of people sit around and dream about things, but they never do anything to make it happen. And obviously, you're the exact opposite. A lot of people should take notice.
I read a quote where you said that Doug helps us succeed with our goals, meaning the people that work with him, he helps you succeed with your goals. How does he do that?
I have no idea. If I explain to people what sort of boss Doug is, people think I must be crazy, because I would think the majority of people wake up and may dread going to work. One reason being is because of the boss. And if I tell them, well, my boss is, he's approachable from an education standpoint. We learn every day from him. He's professional. If you were to ask 10 people, I'm sure 9 out of 10 people would characterize Doug as an ideal boss. And I don't know how he does it. And I'm learning from him each day. And I would love to, when I'm, Doug's age, be half the person he is.
How much different is Doug's teaching style than that of a Todd Pletcher or an Eddie Keneally?
Doug's very approachable. He wants us to learn from him, and it's an open door policy with him. If we have any questions, whether it's, hey, Doug, why did you do this? Or, hey, Doug, what did you see in this horse to make you and sort of Dennis want to do buy this one? And he wants us to know exactly how he operates, where other people kind of might be hesitant to reveal the answer, sort of thing, where Doug was, hey, this is my system. If you want to buy into it, you're welcome to. And people buy into it pretty quick.
You and I were both interviewed by Alan Cutler of the local NBC affiliate yesterday, and he asked me about your barn and the operation of it, and I called it a love fest. And when you watch you guys, you're often together, five, six of you, in you know what some people call the O'Neill entourage, but more affectionately known as Team O'Neill. But when Team O'Neill is on the move through the racetrack, you can just tell the camaraderie between all the guys that work. There's no jealousy. Everybody's got the other guys back, and you all have your place in the organization. And it's one of the most unique things that I've ever witnessed. I've been on the racetrack for a long, long time, and I've never seen anything quite like Team O'Neill. It's very, very unique in our industry.
What goes back to, it starts at the top, and it's a domino effect down, and Doug sets it, you know, his standards, and people want to be around Doug. People want to put the best foot forward for Doug. And it's, again, it's his character that people want to be around him. He's a big admirer of, you know, within the barn, you know, the positive effects that really comes off on the horses. And Doug's results are proven. And not once is there a turnover within the staff or, you know, any upset. You know, Doug comes in the mornings and he'll make a point to walk around the whole barn and good morning, guys, and fist pump each hot walker and groom. And it really does when we travel. And for instance, this week, you know, we've been in contact 24/7, Doug and I. It's amazing the grooms and the hot walkers and in the barn we have here at Keenan, how hard they want to work for Doug. And it really does rub off on the horses. And it's amazing, you know, the standard Doug sets and how hard we want to work for him.
We started, Jack, by talking about your parents and growing up in England and how your parents owned horses. How closely does your family follow your progress and follow your career here in the States?
You know, I'm on WhatsApp every day to them. So it's, you know, the time difference, especially in California, is difficult with the 8 hours. Back here, they're a lot happier because it's only 5 hours. But, you know, at night, I'll send them a text for when they wake up in the morning and vice versa. They read every article and Google, whether it's Nyquist or whether it's I'll Have Another or whether it's Golden Scent, whatever horse we had have at the time, they're always following and they're always staying up late to try and watch it on the English television. And, you know, I'll do my best because if it wasn't for my parents, I wouldn't be here. To always try and FaceTime them after, you know, big horses won, just to let them sort of experience it with us.
Have they ever come for any of the big races here?
They haven't. They've been to visit. It just kind of timing wise and, you know, financially is expensive for the whole family to fly out and things like that. They would love to one day. You know, I probably should ask them if they want to come this time around.
Yeah, well, Doug just picked up that $1 million bonus out of Florida. Maybe you can go to Doug.
Yeah. I haven't thought of that.
No, Mike's a very good businessman.
We love to spend Doug's money. Jack Sisterson, assistant trainer to Doug O'Neill, with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Going to get to a break in just a few minutes. We'll continue that visit in the second half of the program. Jack, talk about being in the assistant trainer position. How much different is that than being the head guy that's the one calling all the shots? I know you're intimately involved with every single horse in the barn. What's it like being the assistant?
Well, you know, obviously we get instructions every single minute from Doug and we follow those instructions thoroughly. And Leandro Mora is Doug's head assistant and I'm constantly in contact with Leandro back home. You know, we have another assistant, Savas Revere, that I'm always in contact with him just to let them know exactly what's going on. There are at times where, you know, an immediate decision has to be made, and because Doug's educated us all in the right where that we know exactly how Doug would handle it. So Doug gives us the confidence to make that decision. Not at one point do we ever do anything without Doug's approval. You know, we get the set list every morning and Doug knows what's going on. if I'm able to shoot him a quick video of a horse on the track, I will. Just so it's, if he's not here in person, you know, he can see everything, you know, what's happened, what's going to happen, and things like that.
You mentioned earlier, Jude, that it's a lot like a big family at the O'Neill Barn. You saw that yesterday when you were over there. Leandro Mora, whose name you just brought up, went through some serious health issues not too long ago, and he's back. He's doing well now. What was that like as a family, an O'Neill family, to go through that with Leandro?
Well, I've been very fortunate to work under Leandro because he's a fantastic horseman. He's taught me a lot. I was actually, I was somewhere traveling at the time when I got the text saying, you know, Leandro's had a minor stroke and I just want you to know, nothing to worry about, but he's in hospital. And it was several days later until I returned back to Santa Anita and I went straight to the hospital to see him and give him a hug. And it was hurtful to see him lying there in the hospital bed, you know, with the wires hooked up to him and things like that. Fortunately enough, he's better now. But Doug has set that, you know, the family environment within the barn that we all want to work together as a team, and it's become a family. And fortunately enough, Leandro was fine, but at the time it was a stressful time for everyone because we need Leandro there and he's one of our bosses. And fortunately enough, again, he's fine, but it was a struggle getting Leandro through that, and he's back there and we'll see him here soon in Kentucky.
What's it like to have him back now?
Leandro, it's the best. You know, I'm chatting to him every morning and just driving over here, I was calling him. And, you know, this time of year, Dennis buys a lot of two-year-olds and it's exciting to see what Leandro thinks of those two-year-olds. And it's still early days, but, you know, some stand out more at this time than others. And just to get Leandro's input on all that, you know, I haven't seen most of them, but I get up to date all the information from him.
You know, there's nobody better with two-year-olds than Leandro because he worked for Brian Mayberry for so many years, and Brian Mayberry was the two-year-old king, so his opinion matters.
Yeah, it's a great family and a team atmosphere around Doug O'Neill's barn. We're visiting with his assistant, Jack Sisterson. We're going to continue this visit in the second half of the program. Don't forget, if you miss any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows. We're back with the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right after this. In 2015, the Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales outperformed all major North American yearling sales. The July sale held in Lexington, Kentucky is annually a top-ranked yearling sale by percentage of greatest stakes winning graduates and saw 15 sires represented by their highest priced colt or filly in 2015. The prestigious Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale posted an increased average of over $322,000 while boasting a remarkably low RNA rate of just 15% and was tremendously strong in the middle market with a higher percentage of horses sold in the $100,000 to $300,000 range than book one of the Keeneland September sale. The New York bred sale in Saratoga produced 50 yearlings of $100,000 or higher with an increased average of more than $81,000. The Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales, superior results. Visit FasigTipton.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
They're off in New York. the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Catch great thoroughbred action at Woodbine Racetrack. 2016 marks Woodbine's 60th year of thoroughbred racing, and the early pick four will be guaranteed at $100,000 on Saturdays and Sundays and $50,000 on Fridays. Plus, Woodbine will be offering 20-cent bet minimums on all Triactor, Superfecta, Pick 3, and Pick 4 pools. And try your luck with the Thoroughbred Pick 5 and the Jackpot High 5. It's all there at WoodbineRacetrack.com. That's WoodbineRacetrack.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's Bodie Meister at the top of the stretch, and Bodie Meister's got a five-length lead. I'll have another on the outside. Now it's moved into second, and then down toward the outside, Creative Cause. Bodie Meister holding on to the lead.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, visiting with assistant trainer Jack Sisterson. He is the assistant to trainer Doug O'Neill. They, of course, went down that road to the Kentucky Derby and through the Triple Crown with I'll Have Another in 2012. Larry Colmus with the call of that race moments ago for you here on the show. Don't forget that if you did miss any portion of the show, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can listen on your computer, your smartphone, your tablet, any mobile device. Take us with you wherever you go. It's all there at horseracingradio.net, as is our entire Derby Week broadcast schedule as we take you down that road to the Derby and beyond here on the Horse Racing Radio Network is your official radio home of the 2016 Kentucky Derby in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. Jack, we figured we'd take you on a trip down memory lane with that call. And I don't know about you, but when I hear Larry Colmus give I'll Have Another the big call as he's starting to run down Bodie Meister, I still get goosebumps. How about you?
It makes me speechless. Every day I kind of wake up and listen to that commentary.
You listen to it every day?
Every day. I have a little clip on my phone that it before work that I go to the gym at 3 o'clock and then just, this is the reason we're in the business to win the Kentucky Derby. And I do kind of get speeches talking about it. No words can describe the feeling. And, you know, when Bodie Meister made the lead and you see the fractions going, I think 22 and change, 45 and change, you think this couldn't be going any better. But then you see at the top of the stretch, Bodie Meister's 3 lengths in clean, still going strong. You think, well, this may not have been going as planned because Bodie Meister did not look like he was stopping at all. Then you think us coming kind of, Mario was 3 or 4 wide and making a move. You thought, well, great, we're going to finish second in the Kentucky Derby, which is still a huge accomplishment. And then you hear Larry Colmus making it, well, here comes, I'll Have Another. Now we're standing in the tunnel there at Churchill. And I'm trying to see the big screen and look down the stretch at the same time. And when you see I'll Have Another momentum gradually coming towards Bodie Meister, and it came to the point where you thought he's going to go on and win it. It was at that time, it was slow motion. It just, the whole world seemed to stop. And I don't know how noisy it was because it just, everything's blocked out. And again, words can't describe the feeling. And when it actually sinks in that you've won it, again, it's, wow, it actually happened.
That's a great description. Hall of Famer Mike Smith talked with us last year before the Kentucky Derby, and that's exactly the way he described it when he won on Giacomo. He said, you hit the finish line, and it's like silence. Even though the noise is deafening, it's like silence. And then all of a sudden you kind of snap out of it and the noise comes back. And he said it almost knocks you off your horse. Sounds like you had the same experience.
The exact same experience. And, you know, you celebrate and then you're jumping up and down and people are hugging you and you're thinking, what on earth's going on right now? And then, you know, you get onto the track and you look up at the 150,000 plus people in the grandstand and you just think, my goodness, you've just won the Kentucky Derby. And then you see Mario come back with I'll Have Another in the Outrider and he's fist pumping and you go up to him and give him a big hug and really words can't describe the feeling. Experiencing that, it just makes you want to wake up each day and work that much harder to get back there and experience it.
It was so amazing for me to watch that and to think back to Doug on that Saturday morning when he first came to my barn and he's walking his first horse and he's holding it as far away from him as he can, like everybody does with their first
right.
walker. And then to see him down there and to see him get that trophy, very emotional for me. And I've been known to get a little verklempt on the radio sometimes. when Shared Account won the Breeders' Cup, my brother had bought her for Sagamore Farm, and I was pretty emotional that day. Plus, I cashed a nice ticket. But it was a day that I will never forget. And then even more memorable was the Preakness, because Mike Amaday, the guy that had suggested to Doug that he come and visit me and take that job, he was there that day. And there's a picture that I've posted on Twitter and Facebook of the three of us after the Preakness having bourbon back at the barn. And, that was like an amazing, amazing day. And I can only imagine what that was like for you. I mean, having lived every minute with that horse, you know, and it's just phenomenal.
It's a fantastic experience. And, you know, you work day in and day out to get the horses 100% for the actual, whether it's a Kentucky Derby or whether it's a $10,000 claimer. At the end of the day, you know, the horse goes out there 100% and it's up to him whether or not he can do it or not. And just to see I'll Have Another come past the finish line first in the first Saturday of May was a big accomplishment from Team O'Neill.
You know, fast forward to the Belmont, which, I mean, the horse couldn't have been doing any better on Tuesday when I saw him gallop. He looked just like he did at Pimlico. And then when it was either Wednesday or Thursday, I saw him gallop, and he didn't look like the same horse. And I mentioned that to Mike and talk about that, like from the thrill of victory to the agony of defeat kind of thing.
It's amazing the highs and the lows in this sport. But I truly think to be successful in the sport, you need to be able to accept it and be strong and move forward from it. The thrill of waking up in the morning and you're seeing I'll Have Another 4-5 to win the Triple Crown in how many years, to then I'll Have Another is now retired before the Triple Crown, the Belmont. And it's, words can't experience that feeling. I remember it to this day and I'll never forget it, when we all found out that, you know, we're going to do what's right by the horse and scratch him. And all credit goes to Doug and Paul and Zilla Redham for making that decision of doing what's right by the horse. You know, he had the whole nation rooting behind him, and Doug and the Redhams never want to let anyone down, but we did what's right by the horse. And, you know, he's there in Japan now and having a great, successful career as a stallion. From us working in the barn, it meant a lot that the Redhams still invited us to come racing with them on that Belmont Saturday. That they give us the strength within to then overcome all this. It was tough. The whole barn, you know, it was, again, that it went from being on such a high to such a low. And Paul and Zilla Redham got behind us 110% and said, you know what, let's be fortunate for winning the Kentucky Derby and winning the Preakness. And we've still got a lot of fun together, you know, as a team, and let's all go racing together and enjoy it. And root on the other Belmont contenders, you know, safe and healthy trip around, and may the best horse win.
Well, and now here you are in 2016, as we mentioned at the top of the show, you're going down this road again with the Redhams, with jockey Mario Gutierrez. It's the same exact team that we saw with I'll Have Another. Going down this road with them as owners after the way that everything played out with I'll Have Another, how much would you love to just pull off the hat trick this year for them?
More than anything. You know, Paul and Zilla Redham put a lot of money into this sport and deserve all the success and more that they've had. You know, whether it's the highs and the lows, they're always 150% behind Doug and the whole team, which gives us the confidence in the world, you know, to wake up to work and be around their horses. And, you know, with Paul and Zilla as the owner of Nyquist, and they owned I'll Have Another as well, they make this whole triple crown journey just more enjoyable, you know, whether or not it's working hands-on with the horse or whether or not it's at dinner time with them. And whether or not it's at dinner time, we all fist bump each other back at the hotel at night, or whether it's a house that they've rented for us, and we just can't wake up the next morning to then be around the horse just for them. And we can't thank them enough. And money for us couldn't buy the experience that Paul and Zilla's horses have given to us.
Nyquist is a graduate of the Fasig Tipton Florida sale, which is why he was eligible for the $1 million bonus when he won the Florida Derby. When did you first get a sense that Nyquist could be this type of horse?
When he got off the van, yeah, I don't remember the exact date there at Sancho Nita. He had a presence about him where the other two-year-olds in the barn did not. He came off with such confidence. He acted like an older horse, and the good horses that we've been around have all acted the same. And at that point, you thought, wow, we may have a pretty good horse in our hands. He went out and trained several days later, and his presence on the track, his mind, you're moving forward, they've all got to be able to withstand the stress of racing and be able to cope with it. And this horse has got a fantastic mind in him. And as you can see, his results have proven that.
Why do you think it is that so many people second guess Doug's training? The way he spaces his workouts, the way he gallops horses, the way he puts horses on unique schedules. Why do you think people are always second-guessing him?
It's hard to believe because of the amount of success, whether it's the Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cups, or all the multiple Grade 1 winners Doug's had. People, you know, to this day kind of second-guess Nyquist. And whether or not it's Nyquist the horse or the training schedule Doug has on Nyquist, Doug is a very, very likable guy. And I think once you're at the top of the game, people always trying to find an excuse to knock you down. And whether it's Doug's training, that I can't question any of it. Since I've been there, it's been nothing but he's been at the top of the game. And I don't know an answer to that. I'm working day in and day out for Doug, and you know, it's as smooth. We've had multiple Grade 1 wins. So to this day, I don't know why people do it.
You know, it's one thing for a trainer to have their critics, but as you mentioned, there are a lot of people that are doubting Nyquist, and all the horse has done is go undefeated, a perfect 7-for-7. He wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile from an absolutely horrific post position. He's the 2-year-old champion. He wins the Florida Derby. He does everything that's been asked, and he does it extremely well, but yet people still doubt him, and people still say, well, he's not fast enough. Well, he's not bred to get the distance. How do you answer people that criticize Nyquist?
Rightly so, everyone's got their own opinion, and we're never going to question, you know, from an outside person looking at their opinion, and, you know, it is what it is. Like you said, what else does Nyquist have to do to prove he should be the Kentucky Derby favorite this year? You know, he won first time out, he drew the rail and got pressured the whole way on the inside. And at the top of the stretch, we thought we may have been finishing second. But his heart was able to carry him to the finish line first in that race. Then we ran him in the best pal, then, you know, the dumb opportunity, and he just continued to go on. And I think after the grade one win at Delmar, people doubted whether or not he could stretch out or not. You know, whether or not he hit the front and idled a bit, or whether or not people thought, well, he's distance limited. We ran him in the front runner, and, you know, going a mile in the 16th, he kind of did a similar thing. And I believe it was Swipe that came up his inside, and for a second it looked like he was going to overtake him. Well, his heart prevailed again. And he was 4-for-4 going into the Breeders' Cup. People doubted him getting the mile in eighth there. He drew the outside. He went 4 or 5 wide. He won, and people doubted whether he could get the mile and a quarter. His seasonal debut was going 7/8. Again, drew the inside that got tested, and his heart prevailed. And then you go from west to east coast. You take on a horse at the time in Mohammed that was unbeaten, and we were a deserving underdog because we were going into Mohammed's home track. He'd been very impressive in all of his wins, and we're going into his home track. He wins again. And I think that, to us, seeing his performance there in Florida, give us all the confidence in Nyquist to keep being undefeated.
It's amazing that after watching the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that people still weren't convinced, because that was one of the greatest races I've ever seen a horse run. I mean, at no time did he look like he had any chance to win, and yet he won the race. And the race in Florida was superb, and it's one of the most difficult things in the world to ship into Florida a few days before the race and win, because the weather is so oppressive, and it was extra oppressive when you guys shipped in. It was like the worst 4 days in the whole time we were down there for 2 months. It was brutal. But now you see Baffert saying, wow, Nyquist is the real deal. You hear Keith DeSormo and Kent DeSormo both say, you know, that horse passed us like we were tied to a tree. I mean, people who know, you know, horsemen who know have a lot of respect for the horse now. And I think that really says a lot.
Yeah, it is. It's nice to hear that, you know, Bob Baffert, one of the best trainers in America, is actually giving the respect to Nyquist. And, you know, Keith DeSormo's ran second to him multiple times. He knows probably this horse second best than us that he's. And to see Exaggerator win the way he won there at Santa Anita and bought his cause here in Keeneland, it's great to see Nyquist having beaten those horses before in the past.
Visiting with Jack Sisterson, assistant trainer to Doug O'Neill, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jack, earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that when you first went to New York for that trip with the U of L soccer team in 2006, you could never imagine that you'd be back 6 years later with a horse going for the Triple Crown and I'll Have Another. So looking ahead now to 2016, what goes through your mind when you think about how fortunate you are to be part of this experience again, and maybe another chance to get to the Belmont Stakes, but certainly to get to the Kentucky Derby?
You know, at this point, we take each day as it comes, and, you know, our main focus is keeping Nyquist happy and healthy and, you know, getting through. There's a long way before we kind of start thinking about being there at Belmont.
Do you ever just pinch yourself? Just thinking, am I really in this position again?
I'm having a hard time sleeping at night. You know, we'll get to the barn around 4:30, 5 o'clock. We'll start training the first set at 6 o'clock. We only have 8 to 10 horses here. We spend the whole day. We don't leave till 5 or 6 at night just because we want Nyquist to be happy. If there's any sort of problems, we want to be there hands-on for him. We have sheriffs come in overseeing the barn 5 p.m. to 5 a.m., and so we're exhausted getting back to the hotel at night. I'm asleep by 8 o'clock and I wake up at 12 and can't get back to sleep. And I'm just read all the news, what's been said about Nyquist, and watch replays of, you know, his previous races. And from that, so it's difficult getting a full night's rest because of the excitement leading up to it.
What's the key to keeping Nyquist happy?
Let him be a horse and keep his exactly the same routine back home. You know, he didn't do anything wrong back at Sancho Nida, and you know, seeing him day in and day out in his regular routine, he's had a, you know, once he finishes training, he goes to the left side of his stall and he doesn't want to be bothered for several hours, where if we see him doing that every day, we know he's happy.
If he was a person, how would you describe his personality?
That's a good question. Let me think on that. He'd be a cool dude.
When you're 7 for 7, you're pretty cool.
Well, he was right in his feed tub last night. And how does he like Keeneland? Is he enjoying the Kentucky experience?
To answer that question, well, how would you describe Nyquist as a person? He'd be a very humble person. You know, he's very quiet, and although he wouldn't be boastful and things like that. He lets his running doing the talking. So he'd be very humble.
So obviously everything is going extremely well for the O'Neill team and for Jack Sisterson as the assistant. Any thoughts, Jack, about someday going out and doing this on your own?
I mean, you know, I've never thought of it. I'm in no rush because of who I work for. You know, it's everyone's dream to train themselves. But the position I'm in at the moment, you question, you know, if you were to go out on your own, how are you supposed to do what I'm doing now? And I'm blessed every day to wake up and work for Doug, and at the minute, no.
Well, it's a unique experience, and it's a unique place to be in, to have the luxury of those nice horses all the time. But it sounds like you've had the opportunity working for Todd and Eddie Keneally to be around nice horses. Well, what other horses have you been around that gave you maybe not exactly the same thrill, but similar thrills?
Well, my first experience, obviously, with Doug was I'll Have Another. And what better horse to be around than, you know, winning the Kentucky Derby in the Preakness. And you know how that went. We had Golden Sense that took us places where, similar to I'll Have Another, he didn't achieve, you know, with the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, but he was able to run in both. He won the 2 consecutive Breeders' Cup miles, and both completely different style of horses. And, you know, with Golden Sense running the Sancho Nita Derby and winning it, and I'll Have Another running in the Sancho Nita Derby and winning it, you would think they'd be both the same, or they were completely different. And it's a learning process every day being around them, that what makes each horse different. And, you know, working day in and day out with them, you get to know them. And I learn from a horse each day that I couldn't pick up a textbook and read. You know, there's nothing in a textbook that I could read to learn what a horse teaches me. You know, with Todd Pletcher, I was around the likes of first year was Rags to Riches, who won the Kentucky Oaks, and he finished 2nd with Octave. I believe it was Scat Daddy, Any Given Saturday, Circular Key, Cowtown Cat, and there was one more. I believe there was 5 that year.
Were you there when Rags the Riches won the Belmont?
I was. I was actually walked over with Octave that finished 2nd. So I was carrying all her equipment over, and finishing 1st and 2nd was great, and that was my first experience of seeing the lilies back at the barn.
You got the short end of that one, huh?
If only I boxed you exactly there instead of playing it straight out.
If you weren't training horses, what do you think Jack Sisterson would be doing?
Well, that is a great question. I've never, because I enjoy doing this so much, I've never thought of what I would do if it wasn't working with horses. You know, I really enjoy, you know, being there for people. So I would, in one way or another, some sort of, whether or not it would be soccer coach or something like that because of the experience I played soccer. And, you know, I love at some point in my career being able to give back. And probably if it wasn't working with horses, I'll be a soccer coach.
Do you find time to play soccer now, or are you too busy?
Well, I had two knee surgeries my junior year at Louisville, so I'm very limited of what I can do, and I do miss playing soccer. And but, you know, if it wasn't, I always look back at, you know, if I didn't have the two knee surgeries, would I be in this position? Because having those two knee surgeries really gave me time to figure out, you know, what it was in life I wanted to do. And, you know, if I didn't have that time, would I be here? I don't know, but I'm a firm believer in everything works out the way it should do in life. And it happened, and here I am now, and I'm very fortunate. Everything in my life has happened the way it has.
Who's your favorite professional soccer team?
Sunderland. They're in the Premier League. The terrible every year, and we always, at this time of year, when the, you know, the end of the season comes, we're always either in the relegation zone or just above it, so it's always a dogfight to stay up. So I'm always checking every Saturday morning the results, and it's, oh, not again.
Kind of like being a Cleveland Brown fan here in the States.
Yeah. Or even worse. Yeah.
Jack, only a couple of minutes left before we do have to wrap up this edition of Trainer Talk, and can't thank you enough for spending some time with us here in the studio today. Always like to end by asking trainers to tell us a little something about themselves that people might not know. So other than soccer and horse racing, what other interests or what things do you like to do when you're maybe not around the barn?
I love to read. Because of Ken Lawler, my University of Louisville soccer coach, he was a firm believer in trying to read something every day and trying to educate yourself. And going to bed at night, I look back throughout the day and ask myself, what have I learned? Whether or not it's something within the business we do working with the horses, or is it something else? And if I lay in bed at night and I haven't learned anything, I'll pull out the dictionary and look up a word and learn a definition. And I go to bed at night having learned something.
What do you like to read? What kind of books do you read?
Motivational. You know, I always try to train my mind to be positive. And, you know, whether or not I've been educated from the material I've read to where not always in life things are going to go as planned, and you've got to be able to mentally cope with it. And because of what I've read, I've been able to, you know, you overcome things and things pop up, and you have to be that strong person to overcome it.
Only about 20 seconds left, so very quickly, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's the best word you've ever learned the definition of when you break out the dictionary?
Success.
There you have it. Jack Sisterson, he's had a lot of success with Doug O'Neill, and they're back down that road to the Kentucky Derby with Nyquist. All the best with Nyquist, my friend, and all the best with everything moving forward.
Guys, it was an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jack, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We will get that to Doug O'Neill and to Jack and the entire team. And wow, fun hour, huh?
Yeah, it was great. Fantastic.
All right, don't forget, if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows at horseracingradio.net. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.